they thought it could only be closed from their side, Tern said, blinking.
Correct. Locke raised a finger. What convinced the ancients to leave our world and close the gate last time?
Hassler coughed.
The Glimmering Folk. Your plan is to allow the Glimmering Folk to return to this world. Perhaps I was not sufficiently clear when I described their intention to eat all of us.
Actually, I kind of assumed that was one of your metaphors, Kale said. Like the 91 seconds thing.
Not the actual Glimmering Folk, Locke said, pointing at Hassler. But if we can find the gate, which we know has to be on Heaven's Spire...
Since the Glimmering Folk can't make contact with the ground, and Ambassador Beale only ever appeared on Heaven's Spire, yes, that was assumed, Hassler said.
And if a very talented Death Priestess could make the ancients think it had been opened, Locke went on, grinning. While a very talented illusionist did whatever he could to reinforce that opinion.
So we're running the Phantom Pox, Kale said.
Locke and Tern nodded. Most of the rest of the room looked confused.
We can't get rid of the ancients ourselves, so we fake something bad enough that they run like hell and slam the door behind them.
The magical energy necessary to mimic the Glimmering Folk will be staggering.
Hassler frowned.
And that assumes Desidora and I can actually get to Heaven's Spire in the first place.
And while you're doing that, Locke said, the rest of us will be at the festival, making sure that the ancients don't actually do whatever it is they're trying to do.
With the crowds, we may slip in as a small fish in the white water, Ulenia said.
Except that the white water is full of bears.
Kale jerked his chin at Locke.
Whole thing is going to be locked down even tighter than it was when we were there before. When we hit the place, we flew an airship in there and knocked out a wall. The canyon is crawling with guards and wards now, if what Pyvik sent down is accurate, plus all the additional security they've got for the delegates from the Empire. No way we talk our way in now.
Kale is right. Desidora sipped her wine, set it down, and smiled.
Except that thanks to our lovely turn.
Yes, I'm a valuable special person, thank you. It doesn't work when I know it's pity praise.
We have information from the Lapa Temporum on how their security is set up, what wards are in place, and also how the ancients used transport runes in the middle of ambient magical energy without causing an explosion.
Desidora smiled.
Nicely done. Can you crack the wards? Locke asked.
Tern shook her head.
Nope. Rotating oral signature, stronger than anything I've ever seen, and layered with redundancies so that if anyone goes all Death Priestessy to suck all that magical energy away and turn it into bolts of lightning, the grid sounds an alarm, and also bless the hell out of these.
Most of the recent changes were authorized by Mr. Lively, who has no activity listed in the Lapa Temporum until a week or so ago. They appear to have learned from my first visit to Sunrise Canyon, Isadora said with a little glare.
However, the wards themselves are limited to the perimeter. If we transport in via runes, using the same oral frequency the ancients used, we can bypass them entirely.
And Heaven's Spire has transport runes, Tern said, which I know, since I was fixing them myself a few months ago.
Once we're in, Locke said, the easiest way to the gate is through the new amphitheatre and into the competitors' wing, where all the people competing for glory and a free paladin band are housed.
What's the security there?
Identification badges, Tassadora said, using an extremely friable crystal matrix and an implanted image of the owner.
Again, almost impossible to fake, and any modification will most likely destroy them. We'll need to get real badges and have Hassler modify whoever goes in to match the badge picture.
I'm assuming that the competitor's wing is shielded from the ambient magic that flooded the mine, Hassler asked. Layering a glamour over someone who would burn their skin off, otherwise.
Yes and no, Tern said. The ambient magic is decreasing, as far as we can tell. Maybe from what they're doing to gather the energy, maybe from something else they're doing to suppress it. I don't know. But yes, they're still locking the whole place off. They also added new locks to the big door in the processing center. It's dwarven. I can do it, but it's dwarven, so it won't be fast.
She sighed.
They've also got dwarves and elves in the mine now. All the human miners are gone. From what we got from the Lampa Temporum, it's dwarves doing the mining, elves working the processing center. Just like old times.
So, Heaven's Spire, transport rune to the event, Locke said.
Lift badges and pass through the competitor's wing. Distraction or stealth to give Tern time to crack the vault door and stop whatever the ancients are doing. Up on Heaven's Spire, Desidora and Hessler prep the illusion of the glimmering folk returning. It goes off, the ancients panic and run. Goodbye, gate. Only question now is how we sneak onto Heaven's Spire, Kale said. Because you know nothing good happens when we try to sneak onto Heaven's Spire. Locke shrugged. This tree ship can outrun any airship in the Republic. If there's anything that can get us up there alive. You mean pass the flame cannons that they haven't taken down from when they picked another damn fight with the Empire? Kale asked. You ran it with Eofor Gemet, Locke pointed out. And Eofor Gemet had clearance from inside help and still also got shot down. May she rest in peace, Kale said, bowing his head briefly. Captain, we can't just run it. If Pyvik can clear a ship, maybe. We can't trust that Pyvik has a leeway to help us without being detected, Locke said grimly.
I have a suggestion, Icy said.
Locke looked over with some surprise, as did everyone else. All right, Icy. Hit me, Locke said after a moment. Icy sipped his tea, closed his eyes, swallowed, and said,
After our first adventure on Heaven's Spire, I asked Tern to use her contacts to gather information on my behalf.
Oh, Icy, no, Tern said.
Among her findings was a ship made from black crystal, Icy went on. Capable of becoming invisible and bypassing standard wards for covert entry. Such a ship would allow us to reach Heaven's Spire undetected.
No, seriously, Icy, Tern said.
Sounds good, Locke said, nodding and ignoring the increasingly tipsy Tern. Where's the ship? Icy put his teacup down, folded his hands, and looked at Locke, which was when she got it.
Presumably still with your sister, former first blade of Archvoyant Silistin.
The Paladin Club had opened recently on Heaven's Spire. An old carver house had been purchased and demolished with impressive speed, and a large multi-story building had been built to replace it, bypassing the normal permit application process thanks to a great deal of money and a great number of friends. The brownstone building reflected tasteful wealth and was furnished to look classically respectable in the way that only new money can. As expected from the name, membership in the club was contingent upon purchase of a paladin band. The first floor held athletic facilities, suitable for the wealthiest members of the Republic, where paladins could exercise, train, and spar to the fullest of their newly enhanced abilities. The second floor held an impressive bar, a number of reading areas where mute elven servants brought kava, or tea as needed, and discreet private bedrooms for paladins interested in finding new uses for their enhanced stamina. The third floor was where actual work got done. Lesigoris sat at a table whose stained wood top was inlaid with gold edging and whose bowed legs ended in dragon head feet. He faced the window, and from his custom-made elf leather office chair, he had a perfect view of the thriving city of Heaven's Spire. His city. This evening, that view was blocked by Misters Skinner, Lively, and Slant, as well as Archvoyant Savert and former Archvoyant Bertram. Skinner, Lively, and Slant sat around the table, while Savert and Bertram stood attentively. Bertram held Gil's power, of course, and wore a fake band that had allowed him entrance.
"Progress on the Festival of Excellence?" Lesigoris asked, taking a sip of expensive bourbon.
"The optics are good," Slant said, and fiddled with his band to call up some numbers. "Demand for tickets has outstripped top seating capacity, and with the upgrades to the puppeteers and their shows, we'll have it on glamour screens across the Republic. We're still going back and forth on the Republic anthem as the opening number, and I know, patriotic, but it doesn't zing."
"Lack of zinging noted," Lesigoris said. "Other concerns?"
"The main dance performance uses most of the paladin athletes and performers," Slant said, pressing more buttons on his band.
"And that does zing, but it's also 80% men. If we had more female paladins, it'd play better." "We've been over this,"
Skinner shook his head.
"I'm damn sick of adding women for gimmicks." "But it plays better," Slant insisted.
"You want something mined, you make a dwarf, right? You want some crystals adjusted, you make an elf. Well, I want every red-blooded young man in the Republic paying attention and thinking about everything and everyone he could do if he were a paladin. And that means I need some pretty fresh-faced girls bouncing around."
"It's hardly the same,"
Lively cut in. The elves and dwarves are tools. Every female paladin is one of our people, stuck riding a woman. Would you want to ride a woman, Slant?
Listen, Larvithis,
Gil's power said angrily.
You know what I mean,
Lively shot back, rolling his eyes. Disgusting biological bits aside, they're seen as lesser, as targets, by too many of the males. Our people deserve to ride predators, not prey.
I'm talking about the optics, Slant said with a hurt look. Bad enough we've got Urijar wearing them. Might as well be putting a band on a farm animal,
Skinner muttered, and glanced over at Savard.
Right. I'm happy to serve in whatever capacity you need, sir,
Savard said with a polite smile.
Once the festival is done, though, I wouldn't say no to a transfer to another thrall.
Right.
Lesagoras tapped the table, and everyone went silent.
Slant, you get your girls. Savart, new scholarship deal for gifted young women. Women are the backbone of the Republic, and so on.
Of course, sir.
Savart nodded.
Once the festival is over, Slant, I want a story about possible concerns for older women using the bands. Something concerning, but not terrible.
Dangerous during pregnancy, Skinner said. Or maybe it's harder to get pregnant.
Slant pointed at Skinner.
Oh, yes, that'll play. They do anything for their babies.
Concomni alto, Sephiris,
Gil's power snapped.
Calm your spark, Skinner snorted. The bands won't actually mess up their breeding.
Good,
Lesagoras nodded.
You get your dancing girls, and our people don't have to worry about riding them when they're old and fat. Skinner, the mine and processing center.
Elves and dwarves are fully controlled, Skinner said proudly.
Surprised the Republic didn't think to use them before. Still have the hunter golems investigating the kobolds, though,
he added with a frown.
Don't want that trash affecting the work. Are they altering the energy balance? Lively asked. If you need me to.
No, no,
Skinner waved.
We're fine.
Lively raised his hands in mock surrender.
Stay on it, Lesagoras said. Lively, anything new on the bands?
I've got a new update to the core energy matrix rolling out tomorrow morning,
Lively said, tapping his own band.
It fixes a few small issues in the messaging program and adds route planning into the map system. It also digs a bit deeper into the host's head, which should make it easier for our people to access memories and offer subconscious suggestions that are true to the host's behavior.
And there are no problems using the crystals on the underside of Heaven Spire for broadcasting, Slant asked.
I'm amazed they're still functional with what the humans did to them while we were gone.
And what they're still doing, Lively added.
It'd be easier if we killed off that little prison they have on the underside and switched over to golems.
In time, Lesagoras said, smiling.
We need people to have faith in Heaven Spire right now, and we can't do that if we have another accident that causes it to kill a bunch of people.
I know, Lively grinned.
I'm just saying, and despite the prisoners and their idiotic brooms, we're good for the festival. No concerns.
Son of a bitch, Lesagoras said, looking to his people with a surprised smile.
We might actually get this thing done. Now, if my pet Westyke can bring down the Urijar woman who's been kicking us in the shins, we'll be perfect.
Everyone smiled back, except for Bertram. Lesagoras wished Gil's power would take a little more active control of the man, but it was a small annoyance in an otherwise good day. Captain Thelenia stayed out of the way until the yelling was done. As a soldier, she understood that arguments were sometimes necessary, but elves did not have the mental fortitude to handle such emotional outbursts for long. When it was over, Captain Locke came to her and asked her to fly them to the Lockenville family estate. She even phrased it properly, noting it as something she would like rather than giving an order. While Thelenia had been outside the Elflands, often enough to tolerate being given an order without flying into a rage, it was refreshing to see a human who respected elven values. Thelenia had her people set course for the Barony of Lockenville. Among other elves, orders were given by the captain, stating that it was necessary for the ship to travel to a location. The navigator would then volunteer to set the appropriate course, while the senior druid would volunteer to tend the tree's magical leaves and ensure good speed.
Human airship sailors would sometimes suggest that this was functionally identical to giving orders, a remark that had led to more than one good-quality tavern fight in Thelenia's career. But they were not orders. It was different. The implication was that even a human sailor would not know what to do, or worse, would choose not to do what was necessary, unless given a direct order. Elves, meanwhile, respected each other too much to claim ownership or mastery. When something was deemed necessary by one in a position of respect, elves did not need to be ordered around. They naturally volunteered to do what was necessary for the group as a whole to accomplish its objective. Alone in her cabin, Captain Thelenia opened a small wooden box in which glittering magical spores hummed and waited.
"I am taking her to Lochinville Estate," she said,
and the spores hummed, pulsed with warm green light as they captured her words, and then went dark as the message was sent. Whatever was necessary for the group.